The Hubble scope is going to be superseded by a $10 billion telescope, the largest and most powerful ever built. The James Webb Space Telescope will be 100 times more powerful than the Hubble scope. It's been dogged by delays and cost blowouts, but the hope is that it will be launched. I think the latest date is December the 22nd. Jane Rigby, Dr. Rigby, is an astrophysicist with NASA and the project scientist for operations for the James Webb Space Telescope. I asked her whether she was excited or nervous in anticipation of the launch.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be so exciting. It's been quite a journey so far, and we have ahead of us 20 days to launch and then several weeks of deploying the telescope in space. So yes, that's going to be an adventure.
So the hard work is not over. It'll have to unfurl and then be calibrated. And we're talking about, 1.5 million kilometers from Earth.
Yes, that's about right. Yes. So the reason that it has to unfurl is not that we're trying to make life more difficult for ourselves. It's that the telescope is bigger than the rocket. That's just, Hubble's about the biggest telescope you can fit into a rocket. So if you want to do bigger than that, you got to furl the telescope up. And so it's curled up tight. And then once it gets into space, the sun shield unfurls and part of the mirror unfurls. And then the secondary mirror has a hinge that comes out in front. So it's very transformery or origami-y. It depends whether you're more into crafts and arts or pop culture.
It's going to be launched from French Guiana. Why is that?
So the European Space Agency is providing the rocket as well as one of the science instruments and part of another science instrument. So it's an international, Webb is an international venture between NASA, the European Space Agency, and the Canadian Space Agency.
Now, as I understand it, Hubble can look back 13.5 billion years.
Give or take, sure.
And this one will be able to look back 13.6 billion years. In the scale of the universe, that doesn't sound like much, 100 million years. So what?
I agree. It's not the right comparison. I think the better comparison is this. The population of the first galaxies, right, that formed after the Big Bang is out there. With Hubble, we've found a couple, a handful, and they look like little tiny smudges. And that's it. That's what we've got. With Webb, we want to fully explore that population, to go down the whole iceberg, pick your metaphor, to really understand in great detail how it all got started, how galaxies formed after the Big Bang, how they collapsed, formed their first stars. Those stars then exploded. We're made of some of that star stuff. How all that whole process got started.
So you can go back to, say, 100 million years after the birth of the universe as we know it at the moment.
We should be able to see galaxies out to, yes, a couple hundred million years after the Big Bang. It depends how bright the first galaxies are and how many of them there are. Those are the things we have to go measure. But yes, we will be seeing across almost all of the history of the universe, looking out so far into space that we're looking that far back in time to the first couple hundred million years of the history of the universe.
Goodness. And the reason that Webb can do this is because it's got more infrared capability, so it can see older parts of the universe?
So Webb is a lot bigger than Hubble. The telescope, the mirror, is about seven times larger, seven times more collecting area. And yes, as you said, Webb is optimized for the infrared, for light that is redder than our eyes can see. So the bluest light that Webb can see is about a nice red wine, and then it goes redder from there. And so that allows us to do two things. It allows us to see these most distant galaxies, because the expansion of the universe, the fact that the universe is expanding, has shifted the light from those distant galaxies to the red. It's redshifted them. And so we need an infrared telescope to study them. And that also, that infrared light is great for peering through dust clouds and seeing the really messy places where stars and planets are formed.
The reason we think the universe is expanding at an accelerating rate is dark energy, which accounts for, what, nearly 70% of the universe. Mm-hmm. Will Webb help us understand what dark energy is?
That's a great question. Yes, it's so exciting and embarrassing that we don't know what most of the universe is made up of. It's amazing. Webb will do some things for the study of dark matter and dark energy. I think the mission that's really going to be transformative for dark energy is another NASA mission called Roman. That's going to be really powerful because it's got fantastically large cameras and is really focused on these cosmological questions.
But is that Earth-based?
That'll be a telescope in low Earth orbit.
And dark matter?
So dark matter, right? So dark matter is something like 30% of all the mass energy in the universe. And as you said, dark energy is like 70, and the stuff we're made of is less than 1%, which is really kind of humbling. Dark matter, we will be able to study indirectly with Webb, because dark matter, that's its name, because it doesn't interact with light. Light just passes through it. But that dark matter, which is mysterious and we don't understand what it is, it interacts gravitationally. And so we can use gravitational lensing, the fact that concentrations of matter actually bend the path of light, just like an optics, like eyeglasses. We can use that to study where dark matter is and to study how it's concentrated. So there are some interesting dark matter studies that Webb will be doing in the first year of operations.
And this goes to your specific interest, doesn't it? The growth of black holes in the centers of galaxies.
I am very interested in that. I also really like using gravitational lenses, to use these natural cosmic telescopes, because we can use them to study galaxies. It's not the galaxy's fault. They just happen to be magnified by these natural telescopes. So yes, I like doing that. And I'm also very interested in studying these supermassive black holes in the centers of galaxies that are from 1 million to 1 billion times the mass of the sun, all packed into a black hole that's not much bigger than the size of our solar system.
Don't you get terrified on a daily basis by the sheer enormity of this?
You know, that's a great question. No, I'm terrified by climate change on a daily basis and whether my kid will have a good future. But the fact that the universe is out there and it is amazing and complicated, and that our tiny little brains, which were evolved to climb trees and run away from saber-toothed tigers, that our brains can understand any of it, that part is so amazing and cool. That part makes me feel warm and cozy all over.
Huh. Hubble circles Earth, and it's only about 550 kilometers above Earth. Webb will not do that. It will orbit a special point which will guarantee it darkness. Is that right?
Exactly right. Yes.
L2, yes. You call it.
Mm-hmm. The second Lagrange point, or L2. Mm-hmm. You want me to tell you why?
Yeah.
So Webb is an infrared telescope. Anything that is warm gives off infrared light. You and I are giving off infrared light because we have a nice warm temperature. The Earth is giving off tons of infrared light. And so while Hubble does have some infrared instruments on board, it's really quite limited in what it can do because Hubble is a warm telescope going around the warm Earth. And so for Webb to be able to see these very, very faint cosmological targets, we have to get rid of all that background, all of that blinding light. And so Webb does that by first we launch it more than, as you said, more than a million miles from the Earth. And then it deploys the sun shield. And then the telescope hides in the shadow of that sun shield for the whole mission, never peeks out. And that allows the telescope and the science instruments to get incredibly cold, about 40 degrees above absolute zero. So very cold. And that allows us to, because the telescope isn't glowing so much, right? It's not warm and glowing. That allows us to see this very faint light from distant galaxies, from stars that are forming, from planets around other stars.
Here's a question I'm kind of embarrassed about, but I don't quite get it. If the universe is expanding at an accelerating rate, are we or our tools like Webb not getting ever further away from those early years of the universe?
Yes, we are. You're exactly right. We are.
And
the fabric of space-time is expanding,
yeah.
And the fabric of space-time is accelerating and has been accelerating. So yes, that's exactly right.
So we can carry on creating ever more sophisticated tools, but is the increase in sophistication going to beat the accelerated expansion of the universe?
Maybe one way to think about it is if you have a piece of information that travels at the speed of light, like a photon, a piece of light, what is the farthest away, if it left at the time of the Big Bang, what is the farthest away it can be and we can still get it, right? Now, if you map that all the way around the sky, that's our horizon. That's how far we can see. And so the expansion rate of the universe and its history tells you how far away that horizon is. But we can still see that far back into time. But what's changed is how much space there is between us and that look back time, because space has been expanding. And then for reasons we don't understand, that expansion rate is accelerating.
I'm talking to NASA astrophysicist Dr. Jane Rigby about the James Webb Space Telescope. Now, Hubble's first images back in 1990 were fuzzy, and it turned out that its mirror had a flaw and the astronauts had to install corrective optics. Is that par for the course? Are you anticipating that there will be things that need to be fixed on Webb? And if there are, how do we do it?
So Webb is not serviceable by humans or No. robots. It was not designed to be. Most NASA telescopes, most of our instruments are not designed to be, right? If the Mars rover has a problem, a human is not going to go fix it anytime soon. Hubble was the exception in that it was built to be serviced. And the reason for that is actually that when Hubble was being conceived in the 60s and 70s, we had no digital cameras. Right? Think about how we were detecting light back then. It was all photographic film, very primitive. The digital cameras that we use now are 100 times more sensitive at detecting photons. And so the mother of Hubble, Nancy Grace Roman, and others realized that this was coming, right? They could see that there would be digital detectors, and there weren't at the time. So they decided to make Hubble serviceable so that the first generation of science instruments could be swapped out for more sophisticated ones. And that's exactly what's happened over Hubble's lifetime, right? The instruments we're using now on Hubble are so much more sophisticated than the ones that are in the Smithsonian. So for Webb, we know how to build these detectors. We have the ability to build fantastic science instruments. So for Webb, there was no need to service it with a second and third generation of instruments. We just built what we wanted now, designed it, and put it in. And so for these reasons that Webb has to be cold, it has to be far away from the Earth, There's just no way to service it. And so all parts of Webb are built to get to a 10-year mission. And it is designed to work the first time. And there has been a tremendous amount of testing, including three different chambers in which we have kind of tortured this thing, subjected it to very cold temperatures, to vacuum. We've shaken it with all the violence of a launch. We've hit it with all the noise, the acoustical noise of a launch, because we know we can't go touch it and fix it. It has to be right the first time. So all of that testing program is designed to make sure that when it unfurls in space, it will do it correctly as it did on the ground in test.
So it's on a 10-year mission. What happens after that?
Well, the 10-year is notional. If we get a good launch, we should have a longer mission than that.
And what happens to Hubble?
So Hubble is still doing quite well. It is in some ways showing its age. It has gradual degradation of its detectors. And it's given us some scares this year. It was in safe mode for a while and had to do a major reboot of the computer systems and switch to the backup, the redundant side of some of the electronics that hadn't been used in 30 years because the side A, the first side got us to 30 years. And now we're on the second side, side B. So Hubble is doing quite well. Actually, I've got some data that's scheduled for later this month that I'm excited about. We're hoping to get several more years out of Hubble. It's in a nice high orbit. What will eventually doom Hubble is the atmospheric drag. There's a little bit of atmosphere up that high, and it drags on satellites and lowers their orbit. So eventually that's what would doom Hubble, is that the orbit will decay and it will return to the Earth. Fortunately, it's in a nice high orbit, and we expect to be operating Hubble for several more years.
Now, you mentioned Nancy Grace Roman, who's bequeathed her name to the gadget that you mentioned earlier, Hubble. Scientists usually give their name to these things. There's been controversy over the naming of Webb. James Webb was NASA's boss in the 1960s. He was a bureaucrat, not a scientist, and there have been accusations of homophobia on his part. And there was a petition earlier this year urging NASA to rename it. NASA said, nah, not going to do that. Do you have a position on this?
What I can say as a scientist is that I am very mindful that there has been a history of discrimination in our country, and that includes NASA as well. And that I'm very mindful personally that I couldn't have my job in the Apollo era as a queer scientist. And that would be a shame because I love my job, and because, you know, in this modern era, we want to attract the best minds. We want to bring the best talent to these scientific endeavors because there's so much cool stuff to do, right? We're trying to understand the history of history, right? Of how galaxies evolved over time. So what I can say is that I'm so excited to be using this telescope, and I think that, as we look to the past, it's almost hard to draw connections to today because things were so very different then, and it was a much more exclusive, discriminatory atmosphere than we have today.
I'm not sure that answered the question. I can understand you being diplomatic, but nevertheless, I take it you did not sign the petition urging NASA to rename?
Well, I'm talking to you as a little piece of NASA, so I can't really have an opinion separate from that in a work context.
Are you confident that the Webb telescope will be up there by Christmas?
It is what I asked Santa for.
It's lovely to talk to you. Thank you. Best of luck. You sleeping all right at the moment, or are you nervous?
Sleeping well. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
That's Dr. Jane Rigby, astrophysicist at the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center. And operations project scientist for the James Webb Space Telescope.